Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and really pleased to welcome back Jack Holtzeder to the microphone. Jack has been with us many times. He's a Madison historian specializing on the life of Frank Lloyd Wright. He's a board member of the Frank Lloyd Wright Wisconsin. It's a nonprofit organization devoted to preserving and sharing Wright's Wisconsin legacy, and there's a great tour coming up on June 6th. Thank you, Jack. June 6th is right there in front of me. June 6th in Madison, and you will have a chance to see many of the buildings that Wright designed and some others as well. And I'll let him tell you all about it. You may have questions about Wright or about his architecture. If you do, please give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Jack, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And every year it seems you're able to put together a wonderful tour. Last year you were not in Madison.
No, we bounce around the state. We have about six locations. Last year, where were we last year? I don't even remember.
I think you did a variety.
Last year was our drive around tour. Right. We have one that loops from Waukesha up to Beaver Dam. We call it On the Road with Frank Lloyd Wright. This year we're back in Madison, and next year we'll be in Racine, et cetera. We have a cycle.
Move around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty popular tour. What can people expect to experience when they go on this year's tour, for example?
Well, you already mentioned in the first minute that we will be seeing two Frank Lloyd Wright buildings that are on that are National Historic Landmarks. That's a step up from the National Register. Actually, there are three, but one is simply a drive-by that we're letting there are a few people paid an extra fee to get into a third one, which is the second Jacob's House in Madison. The first Jacob's House is open to everybody, and then the First Unitarian Society Meeting House in Sherwood Hills, another National Historic Landmark. But there's also a fourth National Historic Landmark, the Sullivan House, the Sigma Phi fraternity house made for Harold and Josephine Bradley in 1909, is open. I don't think there is another tour offered in the United States of any sort, a housing tour, that can have you see four National Historic Landmarks in a few hours' time.
It's absolutely amazing. The Sullivan House, I've driven by it many, many times and often wondered what it's a massive place.
It's huge, but the interior is very original. You remember that disastrous fire in 72. Horrible fire. If it hadn't been for A.C. Nielsen, the guy who does the ratings studies, an alumnus, and his son, another alum of that fraternity, I don't think it would have been restored. They've been extremely generous. I can't imagine how much it cost. But the house looks as original as can be. It still has original furniture designed. Well, the furniture is really designed by George Elmsley, who oversaw the project and then became part of the another firm. Oh, good Lord, my brain is going soft. At any rate, terrific house. The fraternity boys have opened it to us, and we're delighted to be able to share it with our visitors. Huge lot as well.
It's in a wonderful neighborhood of tons of
other significant architecture that is not on the tour, but feel free to walk around and look at it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful area. Chris in Madison has a question for you, so let's go to Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Last summer, my wife and I bought a Marshall Erdman Ranch. We didn't know what it was when we bought it, but we really liked it. And then we went down to the library. We found a Marshall Erdman book, and there was our address. Could you just, I know it's slightly off subject, but can you just tell me a few words about Marshall Erdman, who he was? Mm-hmm. I thought he did study under Frank Lloyd Wright.
Well, he did and he didn't study under Frank Lloyd Wright. He was really a Holocaust survivor. He came from I think Lithuania, and came to the United States in the late 30s, I believe it was, and came to the University of Wisconsin, got married here to a wonderful woman named Joyce, did some graduate work in architecture at the University of Illinois, but with Joyce really founded this construction firm where they did fairly modest housing projects in largely in the Madison area. Well, I would say exclusively in the Madison area. And Wright was sort of interested in what they were doing. He was in a partnership for a while and hired Marshall to build the first Unitarian Society meeting house in the late 1940s. And he sold him this project, and Marshall always told the story in many different ways, but the word was always, baby, I'm going to make you famous. And he did, of course. And then a few years later, Wright began looking at the plans that Erdman was using to build housing, and he said, oh, Marshall, we can do better than this. And they dreamed up this prefab system that resulted in two designs that were realized. The third design was actually the design on Wright's drafting board when he died, which was interesting. And he did make Marshall famous, and but Marshall also had a great deal to do with making himself famous as a man who erected most of his career medical buildings all over the country, and also the Tech Line furniture line.
Thank you very much for that call. And Andrew in Dodgeville, we'll turn to you. Hi, Andrew.
Oh, hey, Jack. How are you?
Oh, Andrew, I'm fine. Thank you.
it's good to hear you on the radio. Thank you very much, Larry. Jack, my question for you is, and you might anticipate this one from me, is what were Frank Lloyd Wright's religious views insofar as you knew them? And in particular, my memory tells me, anyway, that at one point, soon after he built the building at First Unitarian Society, but he gave a talk there entitled Architecture as Religion. Never been able to find a copy of that talk.
Well, the talk is, I'm sure, available. It may be in one of the collected volumes of Wright's writings by collected by Bruce Brooks Pfeiffer, although I'm not sure it is there. The other, the church itself would be able to supply you a copy of it, I'm sure. Through their Friends organization in particular. His own religious views, I would have to say, were decidedly transcendental more than anything else. He came from an old Welsh Unitarian background. He was essentially Unitarian from birth, except then his father was a Baptist minister, and he, who then later in his life, at least beginning in 1879, became, that would have been when Wright was 12 years old, he became a Unitarian minister as well. So it was, and his uncle, Jenkin Lloyd Jones, was one of the most prominent Unitarian ministers in the whole United States, particularly in the West in Chicago. I think if he was asked, he would have said he affiliated with the Unitarian Church most of his life. But I think I would have to say that he was a transcendentalist, a humanist, rooted in that kind of notion, mid-19th century or first half of the 19th century thought, basically out of New England. And he always insisted that what United States needed was, and this was also a transcendental idea, was its own philosophy, its own religion, its own art, its own architecture, that we were not Europeans and we needed to jettison all of that. And he successfully did all of that. And if there was a religion, I think that he practiced it was that one. To become,
right. Was he familiar at all with any of the creativity school that came out of the University of Chicago? Do you know?
He would have been familiar with it, but I don't know that he was essentially a Deweyite in terms of his educational philosophy.
Okay.
And that also was a kind of religion with him, because learning by doing, a Deweyite phrase, really was what he promulgated through the Taliesin Fellowship.
Thank you, Andrew.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Thanks very much for calling. Talking about Frank Lloyd Wright today and also about the Wright and Lake Tour, which is being held in Madison Saturday, June 6th. We'll give you some more information on that. There's a great publication, I'm sure it's probably online as well.
It is online. You can either telephone 608-287-0339 or go online. WrightInWisconsin, all one word, .org.
WrightInWisconsin.org or 608-287-0339 to get some wonderful photos of the homes and other structures that you'll have a chance to see when you go on the tour. Tour, by the way, is, I should mention this, and we'll mention it again, of course, but it's, I think, a fairly nominal fee for the tour. It's like $30, if I'm not mistaken, or something.
No, it's more than that. I've got to look that up. It's $50.
$50, okay.
$50 for non-members, $45 for members. And, of course, we encourage members. We also had a couple of special events, one Friday night and one Sunday morning, but those are sold out, I'm afraid, so I won't even tempt you with them, although they're pretty wonderful offerings. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
The organization right now is attempting. Well, we've undertaken, and we're very near finishing the complete restoration of one of the six adjoining Wright buildings. All of them dwellings, two flat apartment buildings, and two single family dwellings on West Burnham Street, the 2700 block of West Burnham in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, yes.
And number 2714, the first one we tackled, is nearing completion. But the expenses for that sort of thing are enormous. A 900-square-foot house, the exterior restoration, because we bumped into asbestos and some structural problems and all sorts of other things that needed remediation, lead paint. $400,000 for the exterior alone.
Wow. Alone.
Alone. And now we have to tackle the interior. But we've learned how to do it. And so the next one shouldn't be quite as much money, we hope. We now own three of the six houses on the street. And the first one's going to become a museum. And it's a wonderful little house.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. Well, Brian from Madison had an email for you, and he wonders, he saw a gas station in Hibbing, Minnesota, attributed to Frank Lloyd Wright, and wondered if that was true, and do you know anything on the history of that?
Well, there's none in Hibbing, that I'm pretty sure. There is one in Cloquet, Minnesota, which isn't too terribly far from here.
No.
I'm wondering whether he got it mixed up. In the 50s, Wright was fascinated with the notion of the gas station. Beginning in the late 20s, he was designing them. He often had his apprentices design, as an exercise, design various gas stations. He had them with a single core that you could expand in various ways with wings.
Mm-hmm.
They were a standard feature of his exhibitions from the 1930s into the 1950s. But only one was erected, and that was in Cloquet. Yeah. And he also designed for Buffalo for a gas station chain out there, a station that was also never built.
Oh.
There would have been multiples, but they were never erected.
No.
And, so I don't know what he's talking about.
Probably the Cloquet one. Why were they, he designed them. Why weren't they built? Were they?
Well, I think you have to, in order to make money on a gas station, you really have to sell them to a gasoline distribution company. And nobody was probably willing to take. They were not as cookie cutter, easily duplicated buildings as the others.
Yeah.
And but they also said, we're modern, we're up to date, et cetera. That is a definite appeal that gas stations liked to exude. But it didn't happen. He had an overhead delivery system for gasoline that he was very interested in, because it would have been easier to drive trucks and all oversized vehicles mm-hmm. and funny ones, so that it wouldn't be the metered kind of pump that we know about. It was an overhead delivery system.
Jack Holseder, our guest today, Madison historian, board member of Frank Lloyd Wright, Wisconsin, talking with him today about Wright and about the Wright and Like tour coming up in Madison on June 6th, and you'll be able to participate in that tour if you sign up for it. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we'll take some more calls and emails as we visit with Jack Holseder about Frank Lloyd Wright and the tour. Willem in Colfax up next. So let's go to Willem. Hi, Willem.
Hi. You know, I know that Frank Lloyd Wright's considered to be, you know, America's greatest architect, or one of them. And what's always troubled me is about the quality of the buildings. That there's an article in the Smithsonian about falling waters and the, you know, huge cost of restoration. And you just referred to it to another house in Milwaukee, and I've heard that the Usonian house, once that someone redid that in Madison for, at that time, and maybe $300,000 or $250,000, but it always seems like they don't hold up very well, and I wonder if that's attributed to
design, or
I know he was always on the cutting edge and things like that, and they said that lots of times he was ahead of the technology, but still, you know, I visited buildings in Europe that are, you know, 1,000 years old, or 600 years old, or 400 years old, and these buildings of his don't seem to hold up for even 100 years without massive restoration.
Well, first of all, let me say that restoration is necessary for some of these buildings because they've been so horribly treated and altered down the years, and that is essentially what happened in Milwaukee. He was also striving for very low-cost construction on these buildings in Milwaukee. They were a unit system that he dreamed up called the American System Built System, where everything, the joists are, the studs are 24 on center, which is really very wide. Mm-hmm. The house was given rigidity by putting very low-cost lumber inside and out, and then plaster was applied to the lumber, or stucco.
That's how he did it.
That's how he did it. That's how he kept costs down. But he also never really believed that the lifetime of a building should be anything more than 30 years.
That
they would be replaced after 30 years. Remember when he was born. He was born in the 1860s, where America was building in the Midwest. America was building very, very rapidly. And he, in even his early lifetime, was seeing all these pioneer buildings being taken down, newer buildings being put up as needs changed, mm-hmm. cities expanded, technologies altered, etc. So he always assumed that's what would be going on, and that he also assumed incorrectly that there would be other kinds of persons like himself who would design as well and as imaginatively as he, who would take over. Well, that didn't happen. We now recognize the buildings as great works of art. They were intended to be temporary buildings, really, of like 30 years, sort of like World War II Quonset huts, and they don't last. If you want to retain them as works of art for the general public to enjoy, that's the problem that you would have. Mm-hmm. The falling water problem was sort of not of his own making. He'd had the engineers do, and he had engineers, competent ones. That was a cantilever problem, the concrete cantilevers that reinforced with steel, of course. And the reinforcements were not done correctly. Mm. His engineer, after the building was erected, said, "Oh my God, I forgot."
Oh,
something.
It's not something you want to hear.
And the building deflected, and the deflection got worse and worse. And now they've been able to correct it at the cost of a lot of money. But you know, millions of people have seen falling water and loved it. So, is it worthwhile? I think yes. And then there was also the problem of clients and their budgets. They would want something new and exciting by right, but they didn't understand the kinds of costs involved in making something permanent. And so things kept getting reduced, and time after time that happened.
And you mentioned Falling Water. The Pew House is sometimes called Little Falling Water, and that's one of the...
Or Poor Man's Falling Water.
Or Poor Man's Falling and it's part of the tour.
Yes, and it's hardly ever on tours.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
It's a wonderful small house. And it has not been, well, maybe it had roof leaks, but my house has roof leaks, and it's not by Frank Lloyd Wright. It's generally a maintenance problem and sometimes a structural problem where things aren't done correctly to begin with. But the Pew House is in marvelous condition. It's on its third owner, beautifully landscaped, and it's called Little Falling Water because it sits on the shore of Lake Mendota. But there's a ravine that runs under it. And in heavy, rainy weather, that ravine is a brook.
So you have some a little falling water.
A little falling water.
All right. But, and that's on the tour for people to see, that building.
Yes. Everyone who comes on the tour has an opportunity to see a building that hasn't really been open for tours since 2004, and then only for a limited tour. We've never had it on a Right and Like tour before.
Mm. How many square feet is that? Do you remember offhand?
Yes, it's around 1,200.
Around 1,200. All right.
Yeah.
Well, and thank you again for calling. Deborah in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I had a question. Before I lived here, I had come to visit my brother in this around 69-70. He had a friend who... the Taylor family, they had a house. I recall we took quite a bike ride out.
Mm-hmm.
Built into the side of a hill, sort of a semicircle. There was a goldfish pond in the living room.
Yes, that's that's Jacob's Two.
Ah.
And it is on the tour in a limited way. You can. We are only a certain number of people who paid an extra fee are getting into the house, quite a number of them students. The present owners are very interested in student education.
Mm-hmm.
But we are interpreting the exterior of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So you can stop at that house and look around. It's not in our brochure, but we made those arrangements after the brochure was prepared.
But it's there and it's... Lived at. Oh, that's great.
It's
it was a
lived
wonderful
in.
House.
It's...
We went out there several times and spent days just hanging out. There was a little stone cottage that he had built in which he lived, they said, to watch where the light hit because it was this long, curved, south-facing glass wall.
Oh, yes. It's actually a west-facing glass wall.
But it was
Happens that I knew the Jacobses quite well, and I lived in that house in the early 60s.
Hmm.
For a little bit, yes.
Okay, well, this is the Taylor family, had it?
Yes, they the Jacobs has sold it to the Taylors, and the Taylors have sold it to the current owners.
Oh.
We do not name current owners because we don't want them to be bothered. But the present owners of the house have taken what had been an old cow shed and carport that Herb and Catherine Jacobs had erected, and they've considerably extended it, and it's been made into a nice studio for them. And it received a prize from the Madison Trust for Historic Preservation.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. You know, talking about, you mentioned sort of remodeling or additions, and one of the things that interests me, and I've been to the Unitarian meeting house many times, but now that has been expanded and
enormously,
and I haven't been to see it, and that would be an interesting part of the tour, I think, to see how they were able to. Did they blend what they?
Well,
did?
No, it's totally different use of materials. They went to the south end of the parking lot and built a building whose roof sort of begins just a little bit above the parking lot level, but goes down two stories. And it is a shed roof that kind of echoes the roof of the the other building. It does the right building. It does not really compete on the exterior very much with the Frank Lloyd Wright structure. And it, too, has received some awards. It's a gold LEED building, meaning that it has a very high level of environmental awareness built into the design. I have Kabbalah Washoe, something like that, from Cedarburg, the architects, were the architects for the building. And there are some problems, and this is not Frank Lloyd Wright, with the floors. They put a compound on the floors to color them, and it is peeling off.
Oh.
So I just want people to know that experimental architecture often has its problems.
All right. Deborah, thanks again. Robert in West Allis, we turn to you now. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Just want to tell you that one of the teachers in our school system was Harvey Jones, and I believe his uncle was Frank Lloyd Wright, because Frank Lloyd Wright used to give Harvey buggy rides when he was a child, when Harvey was a child. Also, we have a school here, Frank Lloyd Wright Middle School, that is well-designed. He didn't design it, but it was in memory of his wonderful architectural career. Third thing is that on the southwest side of the city of Milwaukee, there are a number of Frank Lloyd Wright homes that a group there are trying to preserve. So,
yep. That's us. That's the Frank Lloyd Wright Wisconsin organization, and it's 2700 block of West Burnham Street.
Yeah, and so you're working on that. And the school, not really, just in his memory, but not really.
Well, that's nice. There are Frank Lloyd Wright boulevards and highways and all sorts of other things named for Wright nowadays, and I'm glad that a school in the state is named for him. As for Harvey Jones, I don't know who he was. There were a number of – Wright had a number of cousins named Jones, and the genealogy defeats me. It was a huge family. His mother was one of 10 children, and there you go.
There you go. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate your call. Andy in Appleton wonders if there's any if there are any Wright houses in the Fox Valley.
The answer is easy. No, there are none. Immediately in the Fox. Yes, there is one.
Oh.
If Oshkosh counts, it's the Fox Valley, and I think it does. The Hunt House on Algoma. It's one of the American system-built designs for the Stephen Hunt family. They'd had a house in Illinois. Mr. Hunt, Wright House, and Mr. Hunt came to work for one of the lumber companies, Sachendorf companies in Oshkosh, and had a house made by Wright, a second one.
Okay. So there's one there, Robert.
And there's Andy. There's another, the Schwartz House, not really in the valley, but it's in Two Rivers, which is pretty close.
Pretty close. Maureen in Waukesha, it's your turn. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Thank you. Jack, I wanted to ask you about some of the new books that are coming out that people think are fact, actually fiction. And one is called Loving Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, everyone knows that Mr. Wright built the house that I lived in for 16 years. So.
Oh, yes. You're that Maureen.
That Maureen.
All right. Well, a lot of this stuff is coming out. There's also the women, Wright's women, Frank's women, what is them called? T.C. Boyle's new book.
Yes.
Which I buy almost every new Wright book simply because I do that.
Yeah.
But I haven't read it. And Nancy Horan's book, Loving Frank, I was quite impressed. She tracked down the Borthwick family members, and she acquired new material and new facts, which she worked into the novel. But these are novelized. Even though they're quite accurate in many ways, I just don't like them because I started reading the Horan book, was impressed, and then said, I just can't do this. But it's made, I can tell you, that Wright Tourism has not suffered a loss because of these new books.
Well, that's good to hear.
The tourism at Taliesin and other places has increased in these hard economic times.
Oh.
And largely because of these novels.
Yeah.
Well, then I should not badmouth them.
No.
They're supporting the cause, and the cause needs all kinds of support.
Thank you, Maureen.
Thank you.
Good to hear your voice, Maureen.
Tony in Green Bay wonders if you could talk about the Wright Warehouse in Richland Center.
It's a wonderful building. Again, that's a 1916 structure. It has it's brick, and it has a perfectly amazing cast concrete cornice around it that echoes some of the California work that was beginning at about the same time. It's not really open for public tours, although if you put together a group of 15 persons and get in touch with the owner, and in our tour booklet we give that kind of information, you might be able to get in. The owners are very elderly, and so it's not convenient for them any longer to provide tours. It's a wonderful building. I've been in a number of times, and we hope that the future of the building will be a public future.
Now, let's go to Christian in Oshkosh. Christian, hello.
I wanted to ask about the Gilmore House in Madison, also known as the Airplane House.
Yes.
Up on the top of the hill there next to Camp Randall Stadium. And wondering, one, if it's on the tour, and two, I've always heard that it's kind of not canonical, or it's got some problems from an architectural point of view, or from a Wright history point of view. I wanted to hear your take on that house and its place in the canon.
It's really had only two owners in its existence. The second owner, it had been rented out to fraternities and whatnot by the Gilmores. He went on to be president of the University of Iowa, and his daughter became an art historian, an architectural historian. The next owner, the Weisses, did add to the south side of the house. They put in a garage, extended the kitchen, and they also altered the front entrance somewhat so that you would come directly into the living room and not wind your way up to it through it's on a hill, and it's the original entrance built into the hill, and you walked up to what would be the first floor. That has bothered some architectural historians. On the other hand, the interior of the house is so remarkably original that and so beautifully maintained and restored by the current owner, who's a granddaughter of the Weiss family, that most historians don't criticize it any longer. They're just delighted that an owner is being so authentic in all of the work that's been done to the house. There's a new roof that looks old. The plaster exterior has been completely restored but doesn't show it at all. Every window has been rebuilt. The electrical system is new but you can't tell, et cetera, et cetera. It's a wonderful house. It is not on our tour this year. It has been on two other tours.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Christian. And let's turn to Julie in Westby. Julie, hi to you.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. This
sure.
is such a great program.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
My family and I live in a house that is said to be a Frank Lloyd Wright design. My husband and I are both pastors in Westby. The church owns the house that we live in, and I believe the house was built in the early 1900s, or it was built in 1920, or acquired by the church maybe in 1929 or something?
I can tell you very quickly, it's not a Wright design. It may be something that was influenced by the Prairie School, given the dates that you were mentioning for it. And I think I know people who have mentioned this house to me, and the architect is known, but I cannot remember his name.
I haven't done my homework to look up who, I'm sure I could go to the local library and probably figure that out. But what I was told is that the design itself was of exactly the Prairie School, but designed by and built by someone
Very,
who worked with Wright or for Wright.
I don't know that. At that point, I don't think it was. I think it's very likely a Bentley house. out of La Crosse, and he was simply influenced by Wright. He never worked with Wright.
Wow. Oh, okay. It is, as I study Frank Lloyd Wright, it certainly has all those elements, the stucco and the mission style, and we have 64 wonderful leaded glass windows to wash. And
oh, but you have parishioners to step in and help.
and now they know that they haven't been washed, so hopefully they'll be calling. But thank you so much for the program and the information.
All right. You're welcome.
Julie, thank you so much. Well, let's again go back through the tour and tell us what we're going to, if we pay our $50 and show up on June 6th, what are we going to see?
You will see our headquarters is at the Unitarian Meeting House. You see the John and Ruth Pugh House. You'll see Jacobs 1, the Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center, and we haven't discussed that at all.
No.
The Harold and Josephine Bradley House, which is the Sigma Phi House by Louise Sullivan. You'll see two wonderful little bungalows by a female architect, contemporary of Wright's, 1910-1911, near Vilas Park. Her name was Cora Tuttle. There are half a dozen of them in that neighborhood, and two of them are open for tour. And then we have a wonderful 1963 house, that's 4 years after Wright's death, by John Howe, who was the draftsman for Wright, who was the most famous of the Wright draftsmen. As Wright was the pencil in Sullivan's hand, Howe was always called the pencil in Wright's hand. And he did that for, Stuart and Jackie McCauley. Stuart was on the faculty, the law faculty at the university. And there's... He's still in the house. It's an original house. His wife had a long history with her father was Jack Ramsey, who worked for Hibbert Johnson and was really the office manager who got the Johnson Wax Building built.
Oh, which is a long story in and of itself.
In and of itself, exactly. Most of the correspondence about that building is correspondence with Jack Ramsey, not with Hibbert Johnson.
Well, Jack, this and people can go to writeinwisconsin.org, if I'm not
mistaken.
Writeinwisconsin.org. Can you show up?
Yes, you can show up that day and buy a ticket. We will probably be available for ticket sales at least by 8:30 at the Unitarian Meeting House in Madison. And you can also telephone 608. I can never remember this number. I've dialed it 100 times.
I've got it down. 287-0339, is that correct?
That's correct.
608-287-0339. And the tour runs from 9 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon.
Right. And you find your own way. We give you maps and GPS, for those of you who use GPS. And but that way you also get to decide when you're going to eat lunch and where, and you find your own bathrooms, too.
and how long you're going to stay in each building.
Yeah. And whether you want to skip one or not. But there are several, particularly the Pugh House. If you've never seen a Cora Tuttle house, they're great. And the Jack Howe house. So that many, many people have already seen Jacobs 1, for example. Well, skip that and do the others. And if time permits... Then do the Jacobs House, and the same for the Convention Center, Monona Terrace, et cetera. You get to pick. There's a lot to see. It takes a whole day.
Always a pleasure, Jack. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's always a pleasure on my part, too.
Jack Holzeder, historian specializing on the life of Frank Lloyd Wright, board member of Frank Lloyd Wright, Wisconsin. And again, that tour is June 6th from 9 in the morning till 5. That's a Saturday, June 6th. Wonderful opportunity, so take advantage of it if you can. And speaking of opportunities, I think there are some opportunities in the green industry here in Wisconsin. And we're going to be talking about greening Wisconsin's workforce coming up next with Sarah White. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.